Our next guest is a successful author, New Age, spirituality, writes books on meditation, intuition, prayer, aura, love the aura, your chakras, another area. In the 1970s, our guest was one of only a handful of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi's personal attendants and administrators in India, Switzerland, and elsewhere around the world. In 1967, about 100,000 young adults gathered in San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury district. Wow. You know, I missed all that. Many were runaways, tourists, but they found togetherness and utopia in that summer of love. January 12th is the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi's 100th birthday, and our guest will share her story, wow, of the Maharishi. All right, Susan Chomsky is the author of Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles, Guru. It's available on Amazon. Hey, Susan, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you today, Ed?
It is a pleasure. So if I understand it right, you were a disciple of his, and did you do work for him as well? Explain what your experience was with the Maharishi.
I spent 22 years in his various ashrams throughout the world, and I was for 6 years on his personal staff. I worked in bookkeeping, housing, I did art, I was a painter, an illustrator, I worked in publications, but I also did a huge painting actually a couple of huge paintings that I worked on when I was there with him. And what was it like? It was a combination of heaven and hell. That's what it was like.
Wow. All right. Well, we certainly are familiar with both of those. Now, let me go through a couple of items with him. All right, just so, because I was a kid, and I wouldn't know his name if the Beatles hadn't hung out with him. So I just wanted, now that I'm grown and this is looking back for me, much more, you know, it's different. You were there. We were, you know, like everybody in the world watching. In layman's terms, what was his theology? What was at the base of his worship, his understanding of the world? What was that first? And in kind of layman's terms.
Well, he was a Hindu, basically. He came from India, and he was teaching a form of meditation that he called and coined and trademarked, which is transcendental meditation, which involved using mantras, meaning sounds that are used in meditation, that are repeated in meditation to help you go into a very deep state of what in India they call samadhi, which means evenness of mind and stillness of body. And actually, it was a very effective technique. I shouldn't say it was. It still is a very effective technique to help people to calm down, to eliminate stress, and also to experience higher states of consciousness. So his theology was, you know, Indian, and he believed in the path of spiritual awakening. He believed that people should empower themselves and experience who they really are.
Now, many people say that this was the oldest religion in the world. Some count it as the third largest. Who is the deity in Hinduism?
Well, they have thousands of deities, but the main deities in Hinduism are Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. It's like a trinity of those three main deities, but they have consorts, and they're known by many, many different names, and, you know, there's a lot of gods in India.
Does Hinduism have a parallel to Christianity, where the God figure comes to earth, saves the sinful, goes back up, and then after that, worshipped after having been? Do they do that narrative? What is the operational side of those three deities?
Well, that's an extremely interesting question that you just asked. because there is a concept in Hinduism called avatar. An avatar is an incarnation of God, just as Christians believe that Jesus incarnated in human form as God. In Hinduism, they believe that, for example, Lord Vishnu has had 10 incarnations, including, by the way, Lord Buddha and Lord Krishna and Lord Rama, and then, you know, seven others, 10 total incarnations of the deity Vishnu. So, yeah, they believe that there's something called a descension, meaning God descending upon the earth in a human form, and that is called an avatar.
Wow. Okay.
By the way, James Cameron knew what an avatar was.
I was going to say that was the use of the word I was familiar with until you just gave us that quick lesson. That was awesome. So going back to what you said a moment ago, right? The use of the mantra and the getting to that place. I forgot the word you used for it, but you get to that state of mind. That is to be totally in touch with yourself, blocking out the distractions of the world?
In a sense, yes, but the technique is not, you don't get there by blocking out distractions. You get there by just using this sound called a mantra and repeating it quietly to yourself and in an effortless way, letting it go. In other words, it comes and goes. It's not like you try to hold on to it or try to repeat it clearly or anything like that. And there's no concentration involved with that method. But it's very effective. It really works. And there's been a ton of scientific research done on it that shows that it helps individuals with anything from high blood pressure to creating peace on Earth. I mean, they've done numerous studies. 500 actually were published on the Transcendental Meditation Technique.
Wow. So when you're sitting there, with the Maharishi, it's funny, you know, I'm looking at a picture of the Beatles with him, all right?
Yeah.
And they look pleasant. Like, that's one thing you pick up right away. Whether it's a big smile with teeth or it's a closed smile, everybody seems to be in a very positive, what's the word, like vibration happening there. So do you bring that into the room, or you discover it when you enter the room? How does this, what I'm looking at, which looks amazing, how does that come together when there is and I'm not sure what you call them, in Christianity would be a little services going on, you get a group together, group prayer. This, what happens when there's five or six or seven seated with the Maharishi?
Yeah, in India they call it satsang. But Maharishi didn't call it that. But in any case, it's just when you are sitting in the presence of a true enlightened spiritual master, there's a kind of a vibration that emanates from that being, from that master. And everybody suddenly is in a really good mood because he just exudes happiness and joy. And when you're around him, it's an incredible experience. There is this feeling of bliss. There's the feeling of upliftment. There's a feeling, in fact, that all your cares and worries disappear, and you just feel like you're in heaven on earth. And they call that, some people call it Shaktipat, some people call it grace, some people call it darshan, meaning the sight of the holy person being in his presence. You just feel uplifted. And that's what it was like to be around him. He was extraordinary. It was extraordinary to be in his presence. But there's one added feature, and that is if you were with him for a really long time and you spent a lot of time with him, as I did, you just get the feeling that this world is insane, that there is no meaning, the world is meaningless, and that only this experience of oneness, this experience of being in the Holy Presence, is the only thing that is real.
Do we see the Maharishi as a clergy? Do we see him as completely mortal, as a, you know, or an ordinary? What is he in that context? Is he more the God?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, he was a guru, meaning teacher. Guru, the word guru means teacher. Literally, it means the person who brings light to the darkness. Because gu and ru, that means light and darkness. So you're bringing light to the darkness, you're enlightening people, you're uplifting them. So that's what his role was. He was an ordinary human. He died, you know, he was cremated.
No supernatural.
And he died 10 years ago, actually.
Right? No supernatural, no miracles. That's not the
oh,
vibe.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, yeah.
There were miracles, but he didn't focus on that. He really wanted to teach meditation and empower people to become all that they could be. And those of us who were on staff, we really got the lesson on being all that we could be. It was very interesting because he said to me, and this is very personal for me only, he said, don't look to anyone. When you don't look to anyone, then everyone will look to you. That was his message for me that he said to me, and that was only for me, but it really was about self-empowerment.
Okay. That story anecdote right there brings up a question, so I guess we'll just go for it. What was he saying to you there?
You know, I really didn't know what he was saying at the time he said it.
Was he teaching you?
It took a really long time before.
Was he
teaching it out?
Right. Was he teaching you how to get attention?
In a sense, he was. Although I never really tried to get it that much, but he was mainly telling me not to be dependent on other people. The main focus of what he was saying is, you know, don't be dependent on me. And don't be dependent on other people.
Yeah.
He was talking about himself.
Right. Right. Now, did he have a falling out with the Beatles over somebody's behavior with a lady? Because I do remember there was a falling out, but I don't remember word for word. I think it was John who said something about it at the news conference. I believe, didn't Brian Epstein's death yank them out of a visit, right? Abruptly, they had to go to London because Epstein passed away?
That's true. When they were in Bangor, Wales, they were on a meditation retreat with Maharishi. That was one day after they met the man. They immediately went on a meditation retreat the next day. They traveled on the train with him up to Bangor, Wales, where they were staying in this college, in college dorm rooms, and eating Chinese food at the restaurant there, which they couldn't even pay the bill because they never carry money. Mm. But in any case, they were in the middle of that meditation retreat, and Brian Epstein suddenly died, so they had to leave abruptly to go back to London because of that. But then several months later, they went to India, to Rishikesh, India, to study with Maharishi. And they were serious about learning and studying and meditating. Ringo left after 2 weeks, though. Paul left after a month. But then two of the Beatles stayed. John and George stayed for 2 months. And yes, there was a falling out. And people believe that it was because of a pass that Maharishi made at Mia Farrow. But in fact, that wasn't it, because Mia left it a month before the Beatles left. She wasn't even there at the time that they suddenly left. But what is reported is that they left because of the fact that one of the people in their party, Alex Mardis, was told by a woman there who was a course participant, her name was Rosalind Bonas, and that she claimed that Maharishi had made a pass at her.
Mm.
And they were very, I guess, at first they didn't believe it at all, actually.
Right.
In fact, George never really believed it. He just thought Alex had his own agenda. He was trying to get the Beatles away from Maharishi because John had named him his guru, Magic Alex, his guru.
Right.
And
he didn't want to be replaced.
And Alex...
Yeah, he didn't want to be replaced.
Yeah, he didn't want to be replaced.
Right, exactly. He was afraid, this guy's going to take over. I got the inside track on John. But John did look upset, because I'm reading now, he did put a lyric in a song with the Sexy Sadie, I believe, is what they're here. Here it is. It says, Maharishi, what have you done? You made a fool of everyone. So John sounded stung by this. What did you feel? You feel this was a false accusation, or did you feel some of the, oh, wow, wait a second, maybe he's not a spiritual guy? Did you have any misgivings?
Yeah. So that was a long time ago. But since then, I know that there were some women who did have affairs with Maharishi. He was not a celibate monk, though he claimed to be one. And some of these women talked to me personally, so I, you know, and they were very credible.
Right.
These are women who I know personally, and who, and even at the time, there were women who confessed to me. I've had at least four women confess to me about their affairs with Maharishi.
All right, so,
he did make a pass at Rosalind, I believe.
Okay, how did you factor that in? When you look at the long view, take him in his entirety, how do you feel about that now?
Yeah, I really don't care what he did in the privacy of his bedroom.
Okay.
That's how I feel about
That's it. Hypocrisy,
he did so
any
much
of that.
Good.
Yeah, right, exactly. Okay, I know, I get it. But in other words, you didn't find it hypocritical or defeating to his
value. Yeah, it was
value.
Hypocritical, yes. It was hypocritical. And yes, people are hypocritical. He, you know, he's not God.
Right.
He's a human being.
Got it. Got it.
But he had a good meditation technique,
right.
And he actually transformed this planet through that meditation technique. I know that's a wide, sweeping statement to make, but the world was really different 60 years ago.
Well, how do you, yeah, go ahead.
I am 69 years old.
All right. All right, excellent. How so? Give me some examples. What do you think his legacy... You paid careful attention to him. So, go ahead.
Right.
Where do you find evidence of his legacy that has been helpful?
Yeah, well, he's the man who made meditation and mantra household words in the West. There was no meditation, mantra, yoga. None of that existed when I was a child. And there were two total esoteric bookstores when I was a child. And now you've got the proliferation of spiritual knowledge throughout the world via the internet, and mainstream bookstores are all carrying esoteric books. So people are much more interested in this topic, and meditation has proliferated, and the world is a much more peaceful place than it was in the 20th century, where millions died in wars, and, you know, it was a bloodbath back then. And you know, the world is actually a better place.
Wow.
And
all right.
Maharishi always used to say, for the forest to be green, the trees have to be green. In other words, if we want a world at peace, we have to create peaceful individuals. And he's the one that introduced meditation to the world.
Interesting. No, it's fascinating, that connection there. So could something like this, a transcendental meditation... Could that, I'm looking for the right word here, could that be used with ISIS and Al-Qaeda and this backwards form of Islam where, you know, we hate progress, modernity, sex, the West, decadence, and we're going to knock down buildings like we did in 9/11, there's more to come? Is it, I mean, can we use it for something good like that? Because, you know, it is hard to accept that the world is more peaceful unless we're going to try and make an argument that it's more peaceful. It certainly doesn't feel more peaceful. I mean...
Well, that's because you didn't live during World War II in the Blitzkrieg, did you?
Well, what good is that?
It's really different now.
But what good is that comparison? What does that do or give? Or, yeah, you're right, but so what? This current world does have clusters of people yearning to spill the blood of people they don't know.
Yes.
Okay,
that's
well,
true.
That looks like a new one.
Yeah, well...
Okay, so go ahead.
Terrorism is nothing compared to these world wars and the Civil War and everything that went before. But I'm not trying to make an argument that okay, Maharishi saved the world or anything like that. But what I am saying is, due to a lot of people meditating, a lot of people praying, a lot of people learning more about spiritual development over the last 60 years,
right,
the world has become a better place. And I see it all over the place. It's just
really
a better world.
What's,
so,
give me the high. You know, it's a perfect time of the year. Give me some highlights. Give me some rays of hope, because we're in this news every day on the air. It looks like you know what? I mean, I'll just be candid with you. You're so great at understanding all this. A lot of us think it's over. Get a grip. Greece went down. Rome went down. Don't be so cocky. Don't be so in love with yourself. You're going down like the rest of the humans. You're not that special. You didn't do anything that great. You're on the decline. Your families are scattered. Education's declining. We're getting away from, we're off doing individualism to the max. How could that last?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so go ahead. Help me out to offset that horrible, gloomy, bleak vision. What are the rays of hope?
I know, it's terrible. It's terrible to turn on the news, isn't it? Depressing.
It is.
So the reality is that as we become more peaceful within, as people learn more about yoga and martial arts and all the things that are proliferated all over, at least our country, that people are becoming more peaceful. They're no longer so stressed and tense as they were. You're not old enough to realize how tense people really were back then. But I see it, and I see that the only way for us to have peaceful communities or peaceful world is through individuals becoming more and more peaceful.
Well, all right, let me toss this one in. I am in full support of spirituality. I mean, I was raised a Catholic, so I know what spirituality means, and I certainly respect different paths toward the greater good. That was something else. It was ecumenical, I think, was the word they used when we were kids. You have to be ecumenical. This, if they're coming to love you, don't start criticizing everything you don't like about them. Remember, they're coming to love you, accept, etc. So I get that part. But the bloodthirst in this current moment is a bit high. You're right. I mean, I don't want to dissuade anything you said before. It was very powerful. World War I, World War II, for sure. That's it. But we thought we were a little bit down the line from that, and it looks like we're sliding backwards if we're not careful. Do you see that?
Yes, I hear what you're saying. I mean, there could be a nuclear bomb going off, which would cause, you know, an eruption of another conflagration that would be beyond even... kind of stuff that went on in the last century.
Right.
And that's why it's more important than ever for people to take care of their own, to take responsibility for their own thoughts, words, and deeds, because that's what's creating our reality, both individually and collectively.
Right.
So it's important for people to be careful what they're thinking, what they're saying, what they're doing, what they're reading, what they're watching on TV, so that they can maintain a positive attitude. It's only through our own individual positive attitudes that we're going to create a more positive outcome in the world.
Yeah. Now, are you optimistic that in our lifetime we'll turn a corner here? I mean, it is starting to look, you know, similar to the way it used to. There are armed conflicts going on around the world. We're not really a more peaceful globe. You know, the human behavior scale seems to keep pushing on horribles and dastardly deeds. Where do you see some trajectory to turn this thing? Because the American society in particular, pretty transparent. You can see what's affecting it. You can watch it make its moves. What do you see that might turn us around?
I think we've already turned around. That's,
okay.
That's, I don't, I mean, considering the bloodbaths of Vietnam and Korea and World War One, World War Two, considering what it used to be like back then, I would say that we are a world at peace. I mean, these small numbers of people that are dying here and there, I know every human life is precious, and the thought of anyone being killed, being murdered, being raped, being tortured, any of that is horrid. But the horrors of millions of people dying, you can't even, there's no comparison. So, I mean, people, really pay attention to history and pay attention to what, to the reality of, look at the numbers, look at the statistics, and you're going to see that the world is becoming better and better. You know, people are living longer, people are having more healthy lifestyles. A lot of people, some people unfortunately are going the opposite direction with the overweight and, you know, that kind of thing, but people are becoming more aware now of the things that are they're eating that are poisoning them. People are trying, they're making an effort, and there's more education about it, for example, Dr. Oz show and that sort of thing. So there's more interest in health, there's more interest in how do we get better, how do we change this, you know, the kind of what GMOs have done to humanity and what soda pop has done to humanity and things like that. But you know, we have to begin somewhere. We have to make a difference. And I think we're on a very positive trajectory to making a lot of good, positive differences.
You know, I can't tell you how much I'm really enjoying hearing that. You must come back on the show. And I think we're going to have on a regular basis, because there's so many conversations that we have begun during this first meeting that I would love to continue with you. This has really been terrific. What do you do now? You're writing? Are you in the middle of a writing project, or what do you do?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, my book, I just finished my book. It will be published in February, although you can pre-order it on Amazon, my book, Maharishi and Me. So that was such a huge project that I've been working on entire last year.
Yeah, how long did you...
But I also... Pardon me?
How long did you work on the book that just finished?
That book, I started that book in 1998.
Oh, man. I love you. I love you. You are awesome. Susan, I cannot wait to have you back. I hope everybody buys this book the minute it's out. Go pre-order it on Amazon. This is fantastic. You are a terrific guest. You know, when I saw the subject, I'm totally interested. I mean, they were my heroes as kids. They were teaching me how to grow up. You know what I mean? I didn't know what was going on, and they knew, and they were so, they had all the personalities, the fiery John, the polite and handsome Paul, the quiet George, the goofy Ringo. I mean, I loved them all, but what you've done today, you, and I thank you for this, you've taken us back and shown us something that was there to be learned, and we're interested very much, like the Beatles were, like you were. I think this is an appetite of humanity that you've tapped into. So thank you for giving us some of the rewards of your thinking and your writing and your meditation. It's a real joy to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much. I've enjoyed being on the show.
Maharishi and Me is the name of the book, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles, Susan Shumsky, and the book can be ordered right now on Amazon. It'll be out shortly. Susan, thanks for today. We're going to talk again soon, okay?
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Wow,
I enjoyed it.
We had so much fun, too.
Breaking news, the best music, the smartest, funniest talk.
It's the Ed Till Show.
Ed Till Show.
Ed Till Show.